As we work towards achieving our decarbonization goals, it is becoming increasingly clear that trust is a critical element of the energy transition. In an age where misinformation and greenwashing are considered real threats, we need to foster transparency and confidence in how we communicate with all stakeholders, from a policy level right down to the consumer. To shed light on the concept of trust and what it means in an energy context, I'm joined by Peter Bronski, founder and CEO of Inflection Point Agency. I'm Pamela Larg, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. Peter, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
First of all, before we start talking about trust within an energy context, tell us about yourself and Inflection Point Agency.
I've been in sustainability for about 25 years. And before I started working on the marketing and communications side of this industry, I was more on the technical side. My degree is in natural resource management. My first major job after university was as an ecologist and then a sustainable communities program manager. And I got into this work out of a passion for and enthusiasm for the mission of sustainability and the environment. In fact, in college, I was originally an aerospace engineering major and a Lockheed Martin scholar. And my academic advisor, when I told him that I was planning to switch to pursue natural resources, he said to me, "Well, you're leaving the money to go hug trees." And that was my definitive point to say, okay, I'm going to switch and focus on sustainability. And that's what I've been doing for 25 years. Inflection Point Agency, I founded in 2017 to specifically focus on strategy, marketing, and communications in the sustainability sector. So that includes, for us, renewable energy, electric vehicles and charging infrastructure, green hydrogen, industrial decarbonization, and climate tech innovation. And as our name implies, Inflection Point, our focus is on bending the curve. And we really think about two different curves. One is scaling the curve of solution adoption so that low carbon solutions are adopted faster, and bending the curve of emissions reductions to achieve a net zero world sooner. And so we work with organizations and companies around the world, large tech companies, climate tech startups, NGOs, electric utilities, government agencies, to advance low carbon solutions.
Thank you for providing that context, Pete. I want to talk about trust. Why is it such an important part of the energy conversation at the moment?
Trust underpins everything that we do from a decision-making standpoint. Spreadsheets and now artificial intelligence inform decisions, but they don't make decisions. Ultimately, there's a human being in the seat or behind the wheel making those decisions. And trust and confidence, which I think is paired very closely with trust, is fundamental to how we say yes or no to solution adoption or to passing new policies or legislation or to creating consumer confidence that they will embrace a new category of solution, whether that's electric vehicles or heat pumps or anything else.
Where, in your opinion, are the biggest gaps in trust, and what is creating these gaps, in your opinion?
I think first it's helpful to think about the different categories of trust or where trust is failing. And so I think there's at least three of those. There is passive trust issues, and that's where you have persistent misinformation, but it's not active. It might be a myth that has not been disabused yet in the industry. A common one that I'm sure a lot of folks have heard is that you cannot balance a reliable power grid with variable renewable generation. Of course, if you work in solar or wind or demand-side flexibility, you understand that that's not necessarily a true statement. But that's a good example of passive misinformation or myths that are still out there. On the other side, there's also active disinformation. And that's where you have proactive opposition to low-carbon solutions. And so in that case, whether it's a coordinated opposition campaign, a specific organization, a specific individual, they are seeding proactively disinformation that undermines confidence and trust in the solutions that so many folks in this industry are working toward.
I actually can't fathom that is the reality that we are facing. So would you say that there are specifically main sources of misinformation that you could highlight for us?
I mean, in terms of specific sources, you see some of it in social media, for sure. And now the age of AI and generative AI is creating new frontiers for sources of information, because it is now cheaper and faster and easier to produce misinformation and disinformation than it has been before. And because that misinformation has become ubiquitous, it has made all of us on any side of an issue suspicious of the information with which we are presented. And when we have lost trust in the information, then we start to question the solutions themselves. And so AI and how it intersects with social media is a big piece, but we also see it with things like local community opposition to siting of renewable energy projects. Ultimately, we're seeing the decision points for deploying new solar, new wind, new solutions really play out at the local level. And the way that communities are reacting to that is partly in response to the information that they are hearing from their peer groups. And in some cases, that information is supportive of clean energy. In other cases, it's actively in opposition to it.
So it could actually be fostering the NIMBYism that we hear so much about, where perhaps people are actually almost objecting to some of these renewable energy projects, possibly from a lack of information or understanding.
In some cases, not just in some cases, in many cases, communities rightly have legitimate questions and concerns about how a project is going to influence their community. It could be the rural character of the landscape. It could be questions about impacts on a local water supply or farming or any other thing that is a community priority. And so those are legitimate questions for them to raise, but you want them to evaluate a project or a solution on its true merits and its true value, and not on a mistaken belief because of misinformation that they have received, either because, again, those myths that have not been disabused are still circulating within their circles, or because they've been on the receiving end of campaigns that have tried to turn them against clean energy projects.
Pete, this is obviously not an easy question to answer, but how do we address this issue of misinformation and foster trust amongst communities and stakeholders?
I think first we need to come back to authenticity and integrity of information. We need to help audiences of various stripes, it's within industry sectors, it's within mainstream media, to separate good from bad. And when I say good from bad, it's not just good information from bad information. It's good actors from bad actors, good projects from bad projects. And good, bad perhaps makes it sound too binary or too polarizing. But we need to bring back in a belief that you can make sound decisions on the basis of informed information. And so I think that's where we have to start. But we also need to come back to fundamental roots of building relationship with other human beings. Again, coming back to this idea that humans are the ones in the driver's seat. We cannot let automation or digitization or artificial intelligence or our CSV file spreadsheets full of numbers exclusively make those decisions. We have to ultimately make subjective but informed human judgment calls about the direction that we want the world to go and the direction that we want these solutions to go.
I find it fascinating that you say that, Peter, because here at Enlit, a lot of the conversations are actually around the human factor of the energy transition. The fact that this is really about humans, it's about building trust, and it's about stakeholder engagement and changing mindsets. It's a behavioral thing. And perhaps that is what our conversation is about. It's really about the human element of the energy transition.
Absolutely. And I love the idea of changing mindsets, because part of that, is, as you just said, comes down to building relationship among all of us who are here at an event like this and who work every day in this industry. Some of it comes down also to how we talk about the work that we do outside of these walls and outside of our colleague set. When we think about low carbon solutions, if you come to this work, as I have, from an environmental motivation or from a climate action or decarbonization motivation, the tendency or the gut instinct can be to speak about that work in a framework of a net zero world, of emissions reduction, of decarbonization. We use words with lots of syllables, and it is geared around emissions and climate. But the work that we do and the solutions that we are advocating for have so many other benefits that can support society and the world. And if we can allow ourselves to pivot our messaging and how we talk about this work, and to talk about decarbonization solutions, not through the lens of decarbonization, but through all the other benefits that they offer, I think that we can make this work and these technologies accessible to a much broader audience.
Pete, what I'm getting from you is that your passion is not just about hugging trees. It is actually about people. And I mean, it's clear in your message.
Absolutely. It started with the trees, but it has certainly expanded far beyond that. And now it's all encompassing. The intersections of this work are everywhere now. The electric vehicles are a great example, where two sectors that previously did not have much crossover, the power grid and transportation, are now merging into one super sector. And so what do we do with that? And how can we move forward?
Indeed. Final question. In terms of the war that we're fighting against misinformation, if you had one silver bullet that you could deploy to make an impact, what would it be?
The personal answer for me, I wish I could make AI go away. Yeah, as I walk around an event like this, and as I look at the solutions that are being put out there, AI is ubiquitous, and I understand the powerful tool that it can be to advance climate action and decarbonization solutions, everything from energy optimization to digesting satellite imagery information to anything else. There's a tremendous role for it. At the same time, as a communicator and as a marketing specialist, I see the undermining role that it can have in again, coming back to this idea of trust and confidence. And so for a silver bullet, I hope that the humans in this work remember their own humanity, that we don't outsource our own agency to AI-empowered tools, as I said earlier at the top of our chat here, to use them to inform decision-making, not to do the decision-making itself. And so I hope ultimately the silver bullet are all the people working in this industry, and we just need to lean into that.
Wise words indeed. Pete, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you again for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions Podcast, brought to you by Enlit and Friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Log, and our producer, Kamo Motse. We hope you can join us next time. Visit enlit.world or subscribe for more episodes.